Are you ready for a kick in the aspirations? Welcome to the podcast that brings you cutting-edge sales and business insight, along with a healthy dose of inspiration and a few laughs. Now, here's your host, Rob Liano.
Hey, it's Rob Liano, and today's episode is going to be so inspiring because it is loaded with insight for business, sales, and life success. You are going to take away two things that might be holding you back, what you need to bring to the table as an employee and an employer, two traits of a great employee so that you can position yourself to beat the competition, three questions to ask yourself to discover your true gifts, how to get motivated, and more importantly, how to turn that motivation into transformation. And lastly, a fast and furious tip on recruiting if you want to grow your business. So without further delay, my man, my guest, my brother from New York City, like myself, so you know we're going to bring this, Daryl Bennett, the founder of Comeback Swinging. Welcome, Daryl. How are you today, man?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks for having me, Rob. All the way from New York City.
Yes. I appreciate your time. And yes. anyone who could lend their talent and inspiration and wisdom, I'm a big fan of. So I catch your motivation on LinkedIn that you do the, you know, you did one today, which is really cool, dropping some quotes. So I knew we had some good synergy because I'm the quote guy. I published a quote book called Pick Me Up When You Feel Down. So I'm big on quotes. Yeah. Anyone who's listened to the podcast knows I like to kick it off something a little different. Many guests don't expect it. It might make you think. I just want to gain insight into you, the person, and see how that maybe plays out into what you know your whole role is today. So,
as long as it's not true for Dan, Rob, I'm good.
No, cool. So, who is your favorite artist, singer, band of all time, and why?
I'm going to just say Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Okay.
MJ, baby.
I don't even have to think of that long. Okay, so why? You know, when I was a kid, I really thought that he was not human.
Yep.
I know it's weird. I think just because of the way people reacted to him, you know, the music, and then the radical changes, of course, with this. So I always just saw him in a different light. Yep. Of course, as I got older, I recognized, you know, he is human. But I love the fact of how people all over the world just gravitated to his music.
Yeah, so, he was groundbreaking. I'm pretty sure we won't see anyone as talented as him in our lifetimes. And I'll give you a funny story. So, and now I'm a rock drummer. I've been on tour, but my buddy David and I, on repeat, listening to "Don't Stop Till You Get Enough," man.
Don't stop till you get enough.
Yeah, I loved him. And you know, he's influenced so many artists: Justin Timberlake, Usher. Even The Weeknd performed. He did the little Michael dance move. Blatant nod to Michael. So, yeah, iconic, man. Good choice.
Exactly. And I know we're going to get into it later. We talk about what I do, mentorship and all that. But it goes right into it because isn't it amazing when you have a craft, when you do something that opens up the door for so many other people? That's the real mark of success. That's 20 years down the line, 30 years, 40 years, people are still doing it. And this is the real neat thing. When the younger people don't even realize this is a redo.
That's when you know you're old, though. That's when I know I'm old. I'm like, whoa, no one even knows that's an MJ move.
That is the truth.
Yeah, so funny. So let's get into it. The first question I have for you is, what do you think holds people back from success and how can they overcome it?
I will say two things. So I think there's two primary forces. I think you have the personal forces that hold people back. And primarily, I think it's in your mind on the personal side.
Yep.
And that's based on, you know, from the very beginning, from the time we come out the womb, we're shaped by what other people are saying and other voices. So that paradigm that we carry around in our head, that paradigm of who we are and what our worth is, I think is the biggest thing that holds people back. On the personal side, then the second thing, Rob, are the institutional forces, because there's personal adversity, and then there's the adversity people face societally, institutionally, structurally. Yes. And those are very real forces as well. Very real.
I agree. One of the things is our what we say to ourselves is either empowering or defeating, right? So, and what other people tell us can either be empowering or discouraging. And very often we're surrounded by people who aren't the most encouraging forces in our lives, right? Which is why I think you have to kind of go beyond that and say, hey, you know what? That needs to change. And that's one of the things I think taking ownership is to start to overcome it. And, you know, because we can become conditioned, like you're saying, on all those external things and all those, like from when we don't even know we're learning in that really adolescent age, right? I think that's a great response, because there is a personal responsibility and then out in the environment. Killer. So that leads me to another question that I want to kind of piggyback onto that. You know, you need to get motivated, stay motivated. How? If anyone out there's listening, go, yeah, that all sounds great, but I'm just not motivated.
And that's a good question, Rob. Yeah. How do you do it? I would start by saying what you put in, that's what's going to come out. So I kind of want to challenge this thinking of all of the answers are within you. It's all inside you. Listen, I used to say some of that, but I'm going to tell you, Rob, I figured it out at 30. I said, if I had the answers all along, I would have been gotten to the destination. So
That's right.
I started making some tangible changes. First, you know, YouTube is a great resource to just watch inspirational things. Connect with people on social media, people who are powerful and positive. As you start to put that into your universe, it automatically changes what comes out. Automatically.
I agree, because it's you know, there's a computer term you just alluded to or directly related to called GIGO, G-I-G-O, right? Garbage in, garbage out. Mm-hmm. And our mind's a supercomputer, man. So what you're putting in comes out. And you can see that full proof on social media. What people are feeding in, they are posting and sharing. So if I love that. If you want to, and all the resources are out there, especially today. You have a smartphone. You have no excuse, right? You can just pop, okay, I'm going to watch a motivational, Earl Nightingale's Strangest Secret takes 30 minutes to watch. You could watch it every morning or once a week and start to reprogram, I guess we could use that phrase, your mindset. And yeah, that's great. I love that you literally just dropped that bomb of the resources that are out there. Just choose something that resonates with you and someone you like. If it's, you know, an Elon Musk type, or if it's something, or like Les Brown's out there, Zig Ziglar's out there, like there are icons. The Bible is really empowering, regardless of where your faith is. There's some empowering statements in the Bible. So there's a lot of leadership, and it's a matter of, like you said, just doing it.
Just
wake up, boom, put your smartphone down, or grab the smartphone and go to that motivation. And especially now, I love what you said about connecting with other people and the networking aspect, and who can bring that positivity or encouragement or motivation. Because, you know, hopefully we're at the tail end of a pandemic when this is being recorded, if anyone wants to know, watching it 10 years from now, right? Or listening 10 years from now, podcast or video. But so all the more reason it's so important to be surrounded by people and reaching out. Because another thing, people tend to isolate themselves, think, oh, I'm not going to bother people, and they're alone, you don't always have to be.
Can you say that again? Can you say that again for people?
If I remember. I mean, you know, be the person that reaches out instead of isolating yourself and thinking, I can't bother anyone. Like, I think that's really important, because, you know, we tend to think, you know, they have things going on, their life going on. But I have noticed that especially leaders and people who are coaches, consultants, motivators, they're always responsive. Like they want to share and give. Like you coming on, you didn't even hesitate. You're like, boom, I'm booking it.
Yeah,
boom,
absolutely.
We're done, right? And it's the same thing with me. I will pick up, I'll text you back. I'll hit you back on a message. Hit me up. I mean, at least you can have some connection and start to build that, because there is a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression, and rightly so. It's a crazy challenging time, and a lot of people are not working.
And people
all these
want
things.
That, right? I mean, look at what we see, the phenomenon of Clubhouse, right? It's that people, it's not technology that people are excited about. It's the connection. People are looking for that. And the funny thing is, you will find 30 or 40 people that will engage someone behind the wall of an application, or maybe even some formal way. But very few people will, just like you said, just look, break the rules, get in front of the person, put themselves out there. And it makes a difference. It makes a difference.
Yeah. And I love that being from me from a sales perspective, I love that now Zoom and face-to-face, you know, over the internet is now the way, right? This is the way, if any Mandalorian fans out there, this is the way. Because I used to love screen sharing when I did sales because they could at least see my screen and they could see a photo of my parent or whatever it was. And you can create a personal connection. Right now, you could jump on a Zoom and say, hey. I mean, it's actually good because since FaceTime's out, I don't think people were using that enough to actually have that connection or maintain your friends and family and stuff. I mean, you know, we have friends in England, Australia, and if it's amazing. We can see their newborn baby because we're looking at a video. So I think, yeah, people should grasp that as well. In sales, in life, in general, just start, yes, getting involved, getting out there, and be the one that's proactive. So I think that's key. So that's a good little bomb right there. You got to go boom and drop that knowledge.
I like that. Be proactive. Yes.
That's it. Be proactive. You know,
because that's in everything.
That's right. Right. And not, you don't have to be in an annoying way, right? But you could just be like, hey, just reaching out to say hi, checking in on you. But, you know, I've noticed that when I am in a funk, when I reach out to help other people, I am instantly feeling better.
There's a good tip
maybe we could share as well as, you know, if you're a little struggling, just say, hey, how can I help you? How you guys doing? Just checking in, and then boom. You know, it's like we said, it's all about connection. Everyone wants to be acknowledged and, you know, in connection with other people.
Absolutely.
So let's get to this, because this is cool. I love where we jumped off. You have come back swinging.
That's right.
I want you to speak on that, because that the title alone for me was so intriguing, and obviously I know what it is, but come back swinging, man, because, you know, there's that phrase, fall down seven, get up eight.
That's right.
And my dad was my mentor, best friend, passed away over a year ago, unfortunately, and still tough for me to talk about it. But he would always use baseball analogies. And it was, you know, we'd be watching a baseball game. And if it's like, you know, bottom of the ninth, two outs, runners on first and second, you're down by two runs. If he saw someone take a strike and not swing, he'd be like, swing, will you? Because you have a shot, right? If you don't swing, you don't have an opportunity. So I was really intrigued about your comeback swing. So please speak on that, because I think people are going to need to hear this.
Yes, yes. Wow. I love the reference, the analogy, the you know, the baseball, the swinging. And if you don't, what's the old saying? You will miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So many times in life, right, we just don't fight back. And so part of my comeback swinging story is just personally coming back from, and I talk about this in my newest book, it's called Comeback Swinging.
Great.
I just talk about growing up in Baltimore City. I talk about, you know, going to Morehouse College and Harvard Law School and just some of the challenges I had afterwards. And how I had to, after a period of losing everything, a period of separation, a period of darkness. And that, I mean, like literally, figuratively, abstract. Every way you want to talk about it, Rob, it was there. You know, and so the one correction I would say is I don't think I came back swinging. I'm still coming back.
Yeah.
It's a process. And what I recognized in my own comeback story, when I looked up, so I wrote the book in 2018 and then 2020 happens and the whole world shuts down. And I looked at the blueprint that I follow to help me stop digging and start climbing.
Right.
And I recognize that this is a blueprint that many other people are now seeking for, whether or not they have faced the same type of adversity. 2020 was a year where everybody got hit in some way.
Yeah, for sure.
And so we'll come and kind of bring it all to a circle. Comeback Swinging, the organization we founded last year, is an organization where we are working to help people come back from failure, loss, defeat, turnarounds in their lives.
Great.
And we're doing that by working, one, with companies to help people get hired, because we can't talk about comeback swinging without talking about economic opportunities.
That's right.
And we're also working with organizations on the social justice front to address the systematic inequalities.
I love it. So I have to say one thing, and then you led me to a next topic I want to talk to you about. But You said you come back swinging. It's not a comeback. You're still coming back. But then there's also the aspect of LL Cool J, Mama Said Knock You Out. Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. Because you still have that experience and knowledge that you wouldn't be able to come back swinging without that. So I want people to focus on that a little bit. It's like that failure. You know, John Maxwell has a great book, Failing Forward. Because if you're learning from it and you keep moving and grooving and come back swinging, you're progressing, man, and you are now smarter and more experienced than before that happened. So I think a little bit of the takeaway here could also be, you know, embrace that change and that failure mistakes you make. But yes, come back swinging. And I know, I believe, because I know you mentioned a Mike Tyson thing, like people have a plan until they get punched in the mouth. So I know come back swinging for you is a boxing analogy, right? But for me, I related it to baseball, which means universal, right? Because, you know, it could be like, I got picked on as a kid in the schoolyard. I got to come back swinging. It's a universal message. So I love that. But let's get to what you just hit on about that hiring. Because
yes,
I consult with insurance agencies, sales-centric organizations, and they all want to hire, right? Everyone wants to hire, build, to grow exponentially, build your, you know, sales force, et cetera.
Yes.
And I see a lot of mistakes in hiring. I want to know from your end, where do you see a failure in the hiring process?
Manually. I think people who are still manually posting, people who are still, let me change it and turn it around to a more positive statement. The biggest failure in hiring now is not using technology and leveraging the greatness of technology to drive your operations forward. To automate your operations, to centralize. So all of your data is in one place, to even manage the decisioning as to what gets posted and when and how long. All of those things, as long as people are manually doing it, they're behind the ball. And there are the fact of the matter is most companies still people are manually doing it.
And yeah, I agree 100%. Especially, it's funny because I touched on insurance. There's a lot of this is what we do and have done always, and a reluctance to change very often. Like I'm a telesales trainer, and I've had agencies where I've consulted say, no, we want to stick to face-to-face. I'm like, yeah, but you know what? You can write more sales over the phone, and you can still have great retention and develop referrals, and you don't have to have your agents driving around, wear and tear on their vehicle, or missing if someone's not there when they get to an appointment, they wasted 3 hours. And they'd be like, nah, we're fine, until the pandemic happened. Then they were like, wow, we can't go face-to-face. So they didn't embrace the change and what was becoming a trend. Right. And that's what I see very often. I'm sure you probably see it a lot, especially with that whole technology. So I have an interesting question. How do you think video plays a part in that?
Video, well, that's actually a great question. The first thing that I thought of when you said that is that 75% of content now is consumed in video form.
Right.
That's important to know. And also to know that I think I read some projection that they're looking at something of 85%. Within the next 2 to 3 years. And that was the projection before COVID, before everybody was home sitting on their phone. Right. So I think that emails and some of the more traditional ways to reach the audience have become oversaturated. And I do believe you're going to find perhaps even in the ads themselves, a snippet of a video to show you what the company is like. Companies have to get more creative. So we're working with, I consult with PandaLogic. One of the companies I consult with is PandaLogic, and they are a programmatic vendor company. So working with these big employers on high volume recruiting. And that's exactly what we're finding, that because of this shift in the environment, people are now looking and saying, hey, we've got to look at technology in a way we never did before.
That's right. That's 100% true. And it's interesting because it's still going to be evolving and growing because that's how life has been and is and going, especially with the things you can implement like social selling. So often come up on my podcast and the use of video interviewing as well as for clients. Like that's becoming more and more prevalent now. It's just, I want to see who the person is because I'm sure you're aware It's like what we alluded to earlier is it's all about connections.
Yes.
So if I'm a CEO and I represent, I'm the brand, right? So for Rob Liano, LLC, I'm the brand because I am the sales trainer you're going to hire. I'm the person who oversees every component of what I do, right? So you want to see like that video of someone because it is a mutual. That's another thing. I want to drop this for people who are looking for potentially a new position, new employment. It's a mutual interview. Don't think you're just being interviewed for this job and you have to be like, okay, great. You need to ask the questions you want to ask because that will actually impress the potential employer more that you are gauging if this opportunity is right for you.
Yeah.
What do you see about that? Like, how often do you see people just not taking that initiative?
More than not, unfortunately. So before, you know, in a former life, so to speak, I taught classes at Exodus. I have to give a shout out to Exodus community doing phenomenal work. And I was working with folks as they reentered home, using my own lived experience and my own education and life experience. And, you know, what we found is working with people in general, no matter what their backgrounds are, most people sit down at the interview table and they've automatically given away their power. I mean, they, one, I don't even think many people see it as a give and take. They don't see it as I have something that the employer needs. This is not charity. This is not, I've worked with people and let's get away from second chances. No, it's not about a second chance. You have a skill set, a resource, a network. The employer needs that. And you need to walk into there with that, not cockiness, but feeling empowered because you're right. If you don't, that's going to drive not just maybe salary decisions, but your entire experience at that company. Because getting the job is really not the goal. It is being successful in the job. And that's
I love that, man. That is an amazing statement. It's not getting the job, it's being successful at the job.
Yes.
So you triggered a few different thoughts in my head. So Jim Rohn, great motivational business guru leader, said, you're not paid for the hour, you're paid for the value you bring to the hour.
Yes.
And you just nailed it because people walk in and think, I need this job. And they do forget that they have a talent and skill set to bring to the table. And another quote, I don't remember who said it, but it's one of my favorites. Self-confidence is not vanity, it's sanity. And it's important to know that you can go in confident because they want to see that you're confident in your ability and that you also have the humility to say, I don't know that, but I can learn it. That's also too, you know, just be, I think, of course, everyone is promoting the whole be genuine, even though I think we should have been this way the whole time. But right now it's like, be genuine, be authentic. I'm like, because it's easy based on what we initially jumped off with about how we get, you know, stuff put on us and on personal self-talk, we can start to be not ourselves. And it's easy to get caught in that. But the more you are yourself and even vulnerability, I mean, those are all good qualities because it's real. But I love that whole mentality of like you want this to be a success. You don't just want to get the job, even though you want to be employed. But you also want to make sure that you're going to be a good fit and they're a good fit for your goals. Because that's the other thing. I've interviewed hundreds of people for different insurance agencies and different positions. And I'm all like, so what are your plans? What do you want to earn? You know, what are your goals? Yeah, no, I just want to make, you know, my bills are like $40,000 a year. And I go, so that's all you want to make? Like, you don't want to earn beyond
that. I just want to get a little bit of
Right.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but you should be thinking, I deserve more and I bring more to the table. It's very interesting. I forgot where I read this, but they did a test study with a group of people and I mentioned this on another podcast too. They had two job opportunities that each of them could apply for. And one was a $60,000 a year, one was $100,000 a year. And I may not have these numbers accurately. But the point was most people, even though they were fully qualified for the $100,000 a year job,
that's
like 80% said they would apply for the $60,000 job.
Wow.
Which that means something. That says a lot, right? Yeah. So which means you probably have a better opportunity or better odds to get the higher paying job because there's less competition.
What's the guy? I forget it. What is it? Dan Penna, who says it's easier to borrow $10 million than it is to get $10,000. So,
right.
But I want to bring something else up that you said. You talked about Jim Rohn. Well, I'll bring up another Jim Collins, right?
Yes.
Good to great.
Good to great.
It's not just about employing people. It's about deploying people. And that's really where the focus.
Boom.
I'm telling you.
Say that again. Different. Say that again.
It's not about employing people. It's about deploying. I don't want to act like I came up
with this. I love it. No, but you gave him credit, but that deserves to be stated again. I love that. It's about deploying right people in the right positions.
In the right positions. And that's when we start. Because when you talk about employment, we're talking about your job. We're talking about, you know, what you do from 9 to 5, perhaps on a professional portfolio.
Yep.
But once we start talking about your work, what you've been put on earth to do, now we're talking deployment. We're talking purpose. We're talking gifts. We're no longer talking resume. We're talking gifts. We're no longer talking career. We're talking calling. And that is an entirely different conversation. And that's why I want to be very clear when I talk about jobs and justice, because our office is working with several companies on an initiative, a jobs and justice initiative, to help 100,000 people from disenfranchised communities get hired in 2021. We're also working with those companies on infrastructure. What are what are your policies? It's again, because it's not just about getting people there in the seats. It's about putting the right people in the right seats. So it's a two-pronged conversation.
I am so on fire right now with what you're saying, because it's literally walking in your passion and purpose instead of settling for this job. And you can take a job because you need it, but position yourself to either become better at that job and in a better position, or use that as a vehicle and the catalyst to then position you to do something that's walking in your faith and passion and talents and all that stuff. Because, you know, you got to do what you got to do. I've been there as a struggling musician, I was delivering flowers, in a van and stuff. So you have to do what you have to do, and that's great. But if you have bigger goals and more talent and more passion, don't let that be your career journey and lifetime. I just want to add that, because I know some people get stuck and it works well enough. And it's like, I call it like the uncomfortable comfort zone, because you're not really comfortable. So it's not really a comfort zone. No. But you can't get stuck in that.
Get uncomfortable with being uncomfortable. Who wants that? But if I could just throw in and say this, because you're right. People have to do what they have to do. My first job was McDonald's. I had a couple years ago, I was working at, because I was still rebuilding. I was working at a warehouse overnight. Okay? So I get it. I also want to say, because I remember I was working from, this was in 2000, for a couple months in 2019. I was working from 7 p.m. to 5 a.m. at this warehouse. I would come back for like 3 or 4 hours sleep, put on a suit, and during the day, because I had the vision. Without a vision, the people perish. So I get, people have to do what they have to do. Right? It's 2020, and 2020 shifted a lot of things. But this is what I want to tell you. For people who are listening, hold on to that dream and know your gift. Where are you great? That when you talk about doing what you have to do, I want you to be, you want to be centered in the place where your gift can shine. And that's the beginning of really starting to touch that deployment. It starts with the gift.
Awesome. Awesome. That is so awesome and so true, because it can be. So let me ask your insight here, because people can hear that message and go, yeah, man, I have a book in me. I want to volunteer. I want to do this. And fear can completely freeze them.
Oh yeah.
How do they overcome that fear?
Just do it. But before I even go there, if I'd step back, I have an entire program to walk people through the difference between skills, passions, and strengths. Strengths meaning gifts. Mm-hmm. People get those mixed up. So if someone comes to me and says they have a book in them, that's not your gift. I want to start foundationally with what I ask three core questions. What were you complimented on for as long as you can remember? What comes easy to you but with difficulty to others? And what's like your third hand? And generally, the intersection of those three questions, we're starting to get a sense of gifting. That's not skills.
Yeah.
That's not what people around you told you. No, this is right. What you're good at, maybe, and pushed you in that way. This is, it may be tied to it, but this is centrally. And once you have that, it gives you confidence, because I'm answering that question about letting go of the fear.
Yep.
It's harder to be in fear when you're in your element.
That's right.
I always am scared to speak until I get up to do it, because I was born to do it. And the question is, what were you born to do? When the fish gets in water, the fear goes away. But, you know, most fish never find their water, unfortunately.
100%, because that is so true. It's like the book is the byproduct of your knowledge, expertise, and gifts.
It's not.
And you are sharing the gifts through that book. I think that's killer, man. So you want to focus on what are those gifts and what can I, because, you know, I always tell people we're on this earth for one reason. And this is my belief. We're here for one reason, to add value to other people, because we're not supposed to sit here and drain people, and we're not just to exist and do, you know, do nothing. So you have something. Everyone who's listening to this has something to give and share, and some knowledge, and someone needs to hear that somewhere, or someone needs to see that. Someone needs to see you become successful so that they can say, wow, I could do that. And that's important too, because we are often surrounded by a lot of negativity.
Yes.
And a lot of, like, you know, even like people are being taught to hate wealthy people, and that, you know, a lot of them don't do the right thing with their money. But if you have that mindset, will you ever become wealthy? If that's your goal.
Yeah, because you can't become what you despise. What you hate.
Right.
And it's harder to become successful at anything when all of your focus is on somebody else.
That's right.
How they should spend their money and what they would do. Well, what are you doing with the $100 you have? I mean, I get what you say. If you had a million, you'd start a school. But if you have 100, what are you doing? Right. Are you taking 10%? And so you said a couple things, but if I could just return back to this point of helping people to understand the gift, right? Once you get the gifting, not the skills. I've worked with so many people who really don't get the difference between your skills and your gifts.
Right.
Because we're so often taught to focus on the skills. Even they tell you, you know, what's your skills? What's on your resume? So even so, the big difference is skills is what you learn. Gifts are inherent. So I had someone tell me my gift is math. I'm great at math. I said, that's not your gift. He said, how are you going to tell me? I make millions of dollars doing this.
Right.
And as we talked throughout the entire hour, I won't get the all of it here, but through the entire hour, and I walked him through my thinking, he finished and he said, I get what you're saying. Math is a skill because I learned it, but my ability to see language, the language in math, to see the beauty in the numbers, that is the gift. I said, there you go.
Right.
And once we get there and not just at the skill, and we understand the full orderness of the gift and you connect it with your experiences, now we start talking about how you can reach people no one else can because of your background. So it's no longer just a stain. It had to, it must need it to be that way so you could then reach more people.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that example is so killer because we can very often say, like, you know, that math is my gift, but you learned that, right? And then you incorporated what you described is the way to translate that or relay that to other people in a manner that they can understand and if they become empowered. So you're sharing the gift again through the vehicle, like we said about the book, but through the vehicle of math. And I love that you said maths, because I learned that from my friends in England. We call it math in New York or in America, and it's wrong. It's mathematics, so it's maths, right? That's what I was told.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, man. No, but you said that. I thought you said maths.
No, that's probably my accent, Ron. You're talking about my accent now. I did not know.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so good. So now I don't feel bad, because I was like, this guy knows.
No, I did not know that math was plural.
Yes, it is, because it's mathematics. So you have to call it math.
That is true. I didn't.
That's what I was told. Oh, I love it. So let me ask you this, because, you know, I like to keep these around the 35, 40 minute mark. We're getting close. I want to ask you this, because I know people can learn things, change habits, you know, improve, become more valuable to an employer, or, and I believe there is a, let me preface it with this. I believe there's a large responsibility for someone who takes a position and has a responsibility to their employer to do that job well, because the employer is counting on all of the pieces of the puzzle to work so that they can have a successful business.
Yes.
I also think it works the other way. The employer has to have a responsibility in making you successful, positioning you to be able to do your job. I see it a lot in sales, obviously, where people are not positioned for success, and it's unfortunate because they're told one thing and it doesn't pan out. And, you know, so that's one of the things that I'm able to help coach on. But for the people out there saying, okay, so I don't know what I have to bring to the table entirely, but what would you think? And well, there's one more question I'm going to ask you after this, but what would you think are one or two traits of a great employee that someone listening could say, okay, I'm a little weak in that area, let me work on that?
Coachable. I'll start with that. I mean, that's, I would say the number one thing, far and above whatever else I could think of, being coachable. Yep. You know, most things for many jobs, you learn on the job. Coachability. And I think I'll go with this with attitude, number two, because I guess they go hand in hand, but they are slightly different. Having that positive attitude, smiling. I'll just say it. I was talking to one gentleman. I was working with him at one of the programs. He had just been recently released and he had just been having a hard time. And he mm-hmm. tells me, he's like, you don't get it. People, you know, they won't hire me because I'm a felon and everything yeah. that has gone on in my life. And you just don't get it. Beyond the fact he didn't know my story, but I listened to him.
Right.
I said to him, I said, you know what? And it was about 10 other people in the room. I said, the truth of the matter is, because he had been in my class now for about 2 hours. I said, it's not. People aren't hiring you because you're a felon. People are hiring you because you look like a felon. And everybody got quiet and looked at me to wonder, okay, is this about to turn into a fight? And he stopped and looked. And there was a very real moment. And then I began to explain to him, look, you've been in here for two hours and haven't smiled yet. I understand you might be going through some things, sure. but you have this sure. hard visage, and recognize how that's coming off. So I begin to explain that just because we've gone through rough things in life, it should not show in our face. My mom would tell me people shouldn't know your story based on this. And so sometimes right. while we think our strength is in this, our strength is in pulling back. Our strength is in the fact that we've lived in these communities where we've had to be hard, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to help people to understand being coachable, having a positive attitude, a positive spirit is what is going to make the big difference. It's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, attitude is important. You know, I forgot the name of who he coined the phrase PMA, positive mental attitude. Because, you know, I kind of always use the example, if you think you're going to fail a test, are you really going to study that hard? Do you be like, nah, I'm not going to fail anyway. So you're not going to give it 100% effort. So yes. the attitude, I think, always impacts the result. And it's yep. just, I mean, listen, it's better. Like, what is a negative attitude going to get you anyway? You're just going to feel bad and you're probably not going to find the same solution in the same amount of time.
Yes.
So I love that because, and that's bold, man. I got to give you props for that. That's bold to tell him.
Look, he's a friend today.
Of course. And understood. That's what happened because you kept it real. I always hate when I see like a sales manager, salespeople struggling and they say, hang in there. You got this. And I don't agree with that. Don't coddle me. That doesn't help me improve. No. Tell me what I can do to get better. I mean, yes. but that's a whole other story. There are a lot of sales managers not necessarily qualified to do their role.
Well, that's
that's a whole other thing. But I want you to say, okay, here's what you need to do, because you should be able to look at it from a different perspective than I, right? That's why coaches, consultants make a living, because I can look at it from a different, totally different perspective and say, hey, this is what you're doing wrong and this is what you can improve. Maybe not phrasing it more tactfully, obviously, and say what you're doing wrong, but this is what you can improve, and that's why.
Of course.
And
come back swinging. That's come back. I have to address, that's the difference between what I'm doing and not just purely motivational speaking, so to speak.
Right.
We've got to go from motivation to transformation. That's the point. At some point, it can't just be, I'm excited, I enjoyed it, I clap my hands.
That's right.
Now, yes, absolutely.
Now what do I do?
Right. Now what?
It's like I'm pumped, and now what? Right. You exactly. just nailed it, right? Because now what is the actionable insight that I could use to transform? And I have to tell you, I appreciate you because you are honest and genuine by giving that real response, because people yes. need to hear honesty, whether it resonates immediately or a week or a month later. Well, you know, that guy was right, right? You know, I come mm-hmm. off as a felon. Being honest shows that you actually care about the individual.
Yes.
Instead of, like I always tell people, lies hurt more than the truth, because the truth has a way for you at least to improve, even if you don't want to hear it. Like, even if you say yes, you know, you probably want to think about your health and get in better physical condition. Even though that will upset you, it's because it's true.
That's right.
But it also shows that, hey, I love you. I want you things to get better. So I admire that about you, because it takes a leader, and a bold, fearless leader, to do that, so that you can risk, you know, potentially him coming at you swinging by making that bold statement. Because it is, like you said, you could feel like, you know, I could picture like a Western movie where the bad guy walks in and everyone goes.
And people know, right, from getting to know me, and I know I get away with more than perhaps maybe I should, just in life.
Me too.
I lead with my heart.
Mm-hmm.
That my heart is in this.
Right.
So when I'm saying it, even if it is no chaser, so to speak, it's not meant to cut deep. I'm not leading with the intellect. I don't feel like, I'm better than.
Of course.
I want to see you succeed, but I understand. Sometimes you got to rip off the Band-Aid. And what you do, and you realize, okay, it's ugly, it stinks, let's fix it.
Right.
Rather than talking around it.
Yeah, let's get the stitches out. Yes. Cool, man. So I got to tell you, man, this has been awesome. Like, I'm inspired, and I love that. That's really cool, because, you know, generally, you and I are the ones doing, like, the whole, hey,
let's inspiration, yes.
I love it. I'm pumped. So I have one question, and then, of course, I want you to tell people how to get in touch with you if you have anything to offer, et cetera, et cetera. So... It kind of goes around full circle. I like asking that initial question up front that kind of throws people off, but this one's pretty simple for you, because I know you're well-read, learned individual, as they say, learned, you know, a former attorney. Like, you're a rock star in my eyes. So here's the question. What's your favorite quote and why?
In the depth of winter, I finally realized that within me there lay an invincible summer. Albert Camus. Before I even tell you the quote again, I'll tell you why. In one of the darkest places in my life, the first person I knew who was an attorney, I'm going to say his name, James Billings. He's one of my childhood friends. And he was the first person I ever knew. His friend was my like best friend, but he was a bit older. Became an attorney.
Yeah.
And when I was in this very dark place, many years later, you know, a friend is someone who... it's just there. And he writes me this letter. And the first line of the letter is, in the depth of my winter, I finally realized that within me there lay an invincible summer. And a tear came down my eye before I even finished. I didn't even know he was writing me. I didn't know it. I just saw that quote. It is the first quote in my book that starts off Comeback Swinging.
Yes.
And it is the quote that I lead with when I'm doing anything, because that spoke so deeply that in winter, it wasn't, I didn't realize in my summer, just anytime, realized it in winter.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's an absolutely wicked inspirational quote. It's funny because, you know, sometimes it just takes that one quote and that stays with you the rest of your life. And that's enough to like be the jump off where, oh, wow. That just hit me. And because I used to post quotes on Facebook all the time, like going back over a decade. And I stopped for a while. And I had all these people going, hey, why'd you do that? You know, you said one thing like at the right moment.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, whoa, I was doing it for me. It was my motivation every morning. I would go, boom. So I read it, picked out a quote, and it was literally for me. And I didn't realize it was impacting other people. And that's when I became aware that, wow, it could be that one thing at the right moment in time that you go, oh, wow. And so now I've been posting.
But, so you're back to the quotes.
Yeah, on and off. Now, I'm not on Facebook as much anymore. I try and automate some posts and stuff, but yes. And that's why I put out the quote book too, because I was like, okay, I'm going to do, you know, four quotes a day for a year, every day. So 365 pages of four quotes. It's breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and a midnight snack. So it's a kind of cool concept. but we're not talking about that. We're going to talk about, so you have a, when are you going to publish your book?
Oh, it's already out. So the first book I wrote, I should have actually had them handy so I could show them.
But anyway, yes.
I wrote my first book when I was 18 called Daring to Be Different.
Cool.
And that book just, long story short, it was a series of jobs. Nobody would hire me. I said, you know what? I'm going to make my own job. I wrote this book.
Nice.
That was when the writing bug hit me. And I actually wrote a quote book and some other books after that. My most recent one is Come Back Swinging. And that's sort of my memoirs. And I there'll only be one Comeback Swinging. One, because you can't live that more than once. And it's a very raw and just transparent book where I just share. I share some things that I didn't even speak out loud when I wrote it. But it's been such a blessing, really, to hear how it has helped so many people. Whether, people have just personal issues, professional, medical, just dealing with loss.
Yep.
And they said, people who have just said that helped them to get that extra kick.
Sweet. And where do we get it?
You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on DarylBennett.com or ComebackSwinging.com.
And Daryl Bennett is a very unique individual in that I noticed you have two double letters in both names. Daryl, two R's, two L's, Bennett, two N's, two T's. I thought that was very cool. So just so everyone knows how to get that. Dude, thank you so much for this, man. There are so many knowledge bombs, insightful into so many different areas of people's lives. You have been an awesome guest, and I really appreciate your time. We're going to sign off. Daryl Bennett, go to darylbennett.com, get the book Comeback Swinging so you can come back swinging. Rob Liano, Kicking the Aspirations. If you like this one, leave us 5 stars. Subscribe, download, do what you got to do. We appreciate everything, and we will see you guys soon. Thanks so much.